Temperatures 32 to 36, snowfall under 1 inch inland and trace along the shore. Periods of rain tapering to showers by midday tomorrow, then ending by evening near 45. Gradual clearing tomorrow night and colder, low 20s, mostly sunny and colder Friday, 25 to near 30 degrees. I'm meteorologist Darren Zalkman on 1490 WGCH.
Join me on Darby and Friends, Monday through Friday, 12:30 to 1, every day. Meet and listen to my local friends from Greenwich Library, Sterling Care, Retired Men's Association, Greenwich Harbor Partners, Bruce Museum, Greenwich Hospital. Whether it's art, music, local events, and parties, let my friends become your friends. Join me, Darby and Friends, 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
The opinions expressed in our talk shows are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WGCH Radio.
You fill up my senses like a night in a forest, like the mountains in springtime, like a walk in the rain, like a storm in the desert, like a sleepy blue ocean. You fill up my senses, come fill me again.
Hi everybody, this is Noreen Ehrlich. Welcome to Defiant Hustle Radio this week. I am really thrilled because we have a great show tonight. I am going to be doing something that I've done before, but it's called What Happened in the World This Week and Why It Matters. And the answer to why it matters is just because that's the story I picked, and that's why it matters. But I picked some really cool news stories. But before we get started on that, I wanted to first do a shout-out to somebody I know who's listening, who's going to be thrilled when I shout it out, but that's Ron Gentile over at the Jeep dealership here in Greenwich. I also want to let you know that First Selectman, Town of Greenwich, Fred Camillo is going to be on the show with me next week. The week after that, I'm going to have John De Benedictus, who is in charge of the adult programs at Manhattanville College. I have on March 11th, Senator Alex Bergstein. The week after that, I have Catherine Curtin from Greenwich Medical Spa. And I also should be getting Chris Franco and hopefully his wife, Rachel, who have restored buildings around Greenwich and really are inspiring for the community, coming on the show soon. So stay in tune for that. Okay, so what happened in the world this week and why it matters? Well, this week we have Valentine's Day, and that is on Friday. And when I try to think of what songs to put on, I kept hearing this John Denver song, Annie's song. And so I said, that's a little strange, but okay, so we'll do... I didn't even know the name of it was Annie's song because it was out. I was pretty young. I remember my sister having the album. But anyway, so that was Annie's song that I played at the beginning of the show. But I looked into a bit about John Denver. Okay, so John Denver, it's just like it just kept coming through. So I did some research, and John Denver was born Henry John Deutschendorf Jr. on December 31st of 1943 in Roswell, New Mexico. He died, as many of you know, on October 12th, 1997 at the age of 53 when his personal plane crashed into the Monterey Bay near Pacific Grove, California. When he came onto the scene and started to gain popularity, he was unique because he had long blonde hair. He wore embroidered shirts, and he had those big, round-rimmed glasses. He was the son of a military man, and he moved around a lot in his youth. But he is known for writing his music and playing the acoustic guitar, amongst other things. But in his early career, Those of you who know that his first breakthrough album was called Poems, Prayers, and Promises, and that included the famous song, Take Me Home, Country Roads. And then in 1972, he put out an album called Rocky Mountain High that included a string of hits, which was Sunshine on My Shoulder, Thank God I'm a Country Boy, a song name I'm Sorry, which I don't remember, but and then the song we played at the beginning of the show that kept coming through. It's called Annie's Song, but it's a love song. And I'll come back to that in a moment, but he was a good friend of, he had a lifelong friendship with Jim Henson and often starred on The Muppets, including doing Christmas specials on The Muppets. He acted in the film Oh God with George Burns. He also hosted The Tonight Show on multiple occasions. Now, he never quite had the same musical impact that he had in his earlier career, but as he progressed into the mid-70s and beyond, he campaigned with Jimmy Carter, who became a close friend and ally. John Denver was a humanitarian with charitable causes for the environmental movement. He pushed to help the homeless, the poor. He fought to reverse world hunger, as well as promoting sustainable living. Denver was also on the board of governors at the National Space Society. So he wrote the song, Annie's Song, which is a beautiful song for this Valentine's Day. And I really tried to tune in. He wrote the song because he had gotten into an argument with his wife, Annie, and he's a poet, and so he wrote, You Fill Up My Senses. He was on a ski lift when he wrote it, and he wrote it very quickly. You fill up my senses like a night in the forest, like the mountains in springtime, like a walk in the rain, like a storm in the desert, like a sleepy blue ocean. You fill up my senses, come fill me again. And so I was wondering, why am I like in tune with John Denver? But I do think on this Valentine's Day that there's a message that I think he represents, that, let me see, that there's, it's important that we remember on this Valentine's Day that the bottom line in life is not that of money, although we may have forgotten that. The bottom line in life is that of love. And Valentine's Day is a good time to remember and to become conscious of the fact that there is much love on the planet, despite what we may be hearing in the news or see going on around us. And now is a time to really amp that level of love up in our lives and in our communities. Valentine's Day may have become commercialized, hypersexualized, but it's really a time for us to remember something that much of humanity has forgotten, which is how to love. Some of us are so broken because of things that may have happened to us as we were children or as we've grown up, that it actually created, it's almost as if the magnet is backwards in us. And instead of attracting and being able to love one another, we get repelled away. But I feel like John Denver is reminding us, as a humanitarian, as a poet, as a lover of nature, and as a courageous man, to remember the divine part of love on this Valentine's Day. Because you know real love, because it enriches you, because it replenishes you. And so, on that note, that's the message that I'm getting that is from John Denver. Now, on with the news. So we're talking about Valentine's Day. And Valentine's Day is interesting. I love the economy, despite me talking about John Denver. So I got right into a news story from the National Retail Federation that says consumers are coming on strong for Valentine's Day. So Americans are expected to set another record Valentine's Day spending this year, 2020, as they continue to widen the range of people that they're buying for, according to an annual survey released by the National Retail Federation. Consumers spent freely during 2019 in the winter holidays, and they appear to be ready to do the same for Valentine's Day. The same strong, this is a quote actually from the NRF president, Matthew Shea. He's saying the same strong employment numbers and higher wages that boosted the holiday season in 2019 is making it easier to say a little extra I love you this year and to spread that gift giving beyond just your significant partner. So those celebrating the holidays plan to spend individually on average of $196 for Valentine's Day, which is up 21%, that's significant, over last year's $161. Spending is up for Valentine's Day to a total of $27.4 billion, up 32%. These are big numbers, so that's a good sign for love. $27.4 billion, up 32% from last year, which was $20 billion. What was interesting, I mean, that's interesting to me because I'm a little bit of a nerd, but the range that they're buying for. People this year are buying because they feel confident in their finances, and they're buying more gifts, cards, candy, and flowers for friends, family, coworkers, and pets. So it seems that 27% of the people surveyed said they will buy a Valentine's gift for their pet. And shoppers plan to spend $5.8 billion on jewelry, $4.3 billion on an evening out, $2.9 billion on clothing, $2.4 billion on candy, and $2.3 billion on flowers and gift cards and greeting cards. So that is Valentine's Day. I thought it was interesting because you always hear these conflicting reports about consumer confidence and some things that are happening in the news. But I did go on to look because I thought I had read that Macy's was closing down 125 of its stores. And they're having a hard time competing with Amazon. I'm not trying to make this a downer, but there's always this conflicting emotional feeling that people have, which is generally what drives the economy. But and then these conflicting stories you hear about big organizations. So Macy's closing down 125 stores in an attempt. Well, I guess they're being beaten up by Amazon. And then I read also that Fairway Market in Stamford is also planning to close due to poor performance. So I was looking through for stories to talk about, and I did see that this is the next story, folks, U.S. job openings hit a two-year low. In the U.S. businesses, according to Reuters, sharply cut the number of jobs they advertised in December 2019 for the second straight month, which is an unusual sign of weakness to an otherwise healthy job market. The number of available positions dropped 5.4% to 6.4 million. So available positions at 6.4 million, which is still a good number, according to the Labor Department. There are apparently still more open jobs out there than there are unemployed people. So there's more jobs out there than apparently there are unemployed people. But the total number of available jobs has fallen by more than 1 million in 2019. It's fallen by 1 million, the biggest annual drop since the Great Recession. Job openings are now at their lowest level in 2 years. The report from the Labor Department showed a pickup in layoffs at the end of the year. And though the job openings are still remain relatively high, the Labor Department says the sharp declines at the end of 2019 were potentially warning signs for the expansion that's gone on in our economy for the last 11 years. A quote from Chris Rupke, the chief economist at MUFG Bank in New York, MUFG Bank. He says, and I quote, "Something is happening out there to the economy. And while we can't quite be sure what it is, this collapse in the need for labor on the part of companies is not a positive development." So as I look through the numbers, it says December, the decline in December followed a decline, a plunge in November of 2019 of 574,000 jobs, which was the biggest drop since 2015. So one gentleman, John Riding, who's the chief economic advisor at Brean Capital in New York, pointed out that what he thought might be an issue was not an issue, a consideration, was the greater willingness of employers to hire and train workers from within instead of going out and trying to hire new employees. But it was still a cautionary signal, and that we should watch this data in the upcoming months. They did say that the risks, according to Moody's analytics, risks are stacked to the downside, at least in the near term, due to the fallout from the coronavirus, problems in the aircraft industry with Boeing, and the possibility of policy missteps on restrictions, including trade. They are looking for more STEM-type employees, so people that have skills around STEM, and apparently there's not enough of them. So what is STEM? STEM is science, technology, engineering, and math. So I went in and I looked to see what were the top jobs where you could get a job. What are the top jobs for 2020? And according to the list I found, and you can tell your kids if they're going out there to get work, these are the top jobs. Ready, number one is artificial intelligence or AI specialist. So according to, AI specialists, the businesses are looking to find humans who know how to apply machine learning to catch bad financial transactions, to prevent hospital readmissions, or to tell sales reps which lead is worth chasing. So what they're doing is they're looking for people to evaluate data and give guidance around that data. So that's an AI specialist. The next one, number two, cybersecurity pro. If you're a cybersecurity pro, there is zero unemployment in this field. There's such a demand for people around cybersecurity that the demand far outstrips the supply of people who know how to be a cybersecurity pro. The next type of person that can get a job easily in 2020 is generally called a Silicon Alley worker. And they're pointing out that not only did Amazon just announce that it'll be leasing 335,000 square feet near the Hudson Yards, and that will add 1,500 jobs, tech jobs. But Google is also expected to grow its headcount in New York by 10,000. So, Silicon Alley type of jobs. Robotics engineer. Someone is going to have to build the robots that will eventually steal all of our jobs. So we need the robotics engineers to create the robotics, to create the algorithms that will have us all work for the gig economy. I did a show 2 weeks ago on the gig economy, and data from LinkedIn, the professional platform LinkedIn, show that there's a 40% job growth rate in robotics engineering. The last two, very quickly, is something called a customer success specialist, and that's the person that goes in after you've sold your product or after you've sold your service and makes sure the buyer of that product or service is happy with the user experience, educates them about how to use the product, and also identifies opportunities for add-on sales around that product. And lastly, computer, cloud, and data engineers and coders. Those are the developers that write the apps that we use, data scientists that create the algorithms that we use, and also cloud engineers who make sure we can access the files that we store on the web. So that is the economy around jobs. I am going to move right into something that has to do with the economy, but also has to do, wait, I'm being told to take a break. You want me to take a break?
It's a good time.
Okay, we're going to go to a break, folks. This is Noreen Ehrlich with Defy and Hustle, and I'll talk to you in just a moment.
Good evening. If you're traveling north on the Connecticut Turnpike, 25-minute ride from Greenwich up to Norwalk, southbound traffic still a bit sluggish from exit 4 down to the state line. We're doing great on the Merritt Parkway in both directions between Greenwich and Norwalk. Use your power to cure IBS. Join the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation at Spin for Crohn's and Colitis Cures. Get started at spinfor.org. I'm Jay Trelace, 1490 Traffic Center.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
Clouds move in overnight tonight with rain and snow developing, then changing to rain, 32 to 36. Snowfall under 1 inch inland and trace along the shore. Periods of rain tapering to showers by midday tomorrow, then ending by evening. 45 and gradual clearing tomorrow night and colder. 20 to 25, mostly sunny and cold Friday. 25 to near 30. More sun but cold Saturday, 25 to 30. Enjoy the winter weather without driving in it by taking the Port Jeff Ferry to Long Island, New York. Experience the great winter season by shopping in Port Jefferson. Call the Port Jeff Ferry at 888-443-3779. I'm meteorologist Darren Zalkman on 1490 WGCH.
Are you a business owner who's suffering from what I call the entrepreneur's dilemma? That means you have a successful business, but you're so caught up in operations that you are overwhelmed. Maybe you're capital constrained, or you just know that you can scale your business to another level, but you need help doing that. This is Noreen Ehrlich from Defy and Hustle Radio. I'm an executive coach based in Greenwich, Connecticut. For over two decades, I worked as a CFO and CPA in Wall Street's fast-paced real estate private equity industry, where I helped start up and turn around hundreds of underperforming businesses. Based on this know-how, I created a 100-day plan that I tailor to your business to make sure that you streamline operations, drive performance, and generate profits fast. Don't wait. Take advantage of my free 50-minute consultation by visiting my website at NoreenEhrlich.com or by calling me at 475-333-2173.
With a burning violin,
dance me through the panic till I'm gathered safely in. Lift me like an olive branch and be my homeward dove, and dance me to the end of love.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back. This is Noreen Ehrlich with Defiant Hustle Radio, and I'm getting right back into my Valentine's Day special with Leonard Cohen singing Dance Me to the End of Love. But we're going to go back to something a little drier than that, which is me doing the What Happened in the World This Week and Why It Matters news, and I'm going to get into something that has a touch of politics and a touch of Connecticut and a touch of economics, which is the Bradley Airport, Bradley International Airport, the long forgotten for those of us in the southeast portion of Connecticut. The Bradley International Airport is continuing its growth trajectory, and it saw its passenger numbers uptick in 2019 and its cargo business growing by 25%, which is a really big number. According to Kevin Dillon, who's the executive director of the, and you're going to hear this word thrown around a lot, quasi-public, get ready, quasi-public Connecticut Aviation Administration. The quasi-public, that's that public-private partnership. So anyway, according to him, it's the seventh consecutive year of passenger growth. And it's a reflection of our continuing efforts to develop additional routes here in the airport. In 2019, new routes included Frontier Airlines, which has flights from Bradley to Denver, Miami, and Raleigh-Durham airports in North Carolina, airport in North Carolina. The other airline, which represents a source of growth to Bradley International, is Aer Lingus. And they put in a route from Bradley Airport to Dublin, Ireland, which has been growing. Last year, Aer Lingus posted nearly 85,000 enplanements, which means people getting on the plane and off the plane, hopefully. So anyway, it's 2.5% higher than it was in 2018. So there's growth there. And Kevin Dillon from the Connecticut Aviation Administration said these increases they demonstrate the wisdom in the two-year $13 million incentive deal that the state made with Aer Lingus. So it sounds like the state is investing in Bradley Airport, and it's starting to show returns finally. Cargo volume at Bradley spiked 24.5% in 2019. And passenger numbers and cargo revenue at Bradley they're improving, and they are putting a rental car facility. I guess right now the rental car facilities are off campus and you have to take a shuttle. But now there is under construction a facility that will place all the rental car companies directly at the airport, eliminating the need for shuttle service. So that is what's going on at Bradley Airport up in Connecticut. Also, some breaking news. As of yesterday, our governor, Ned Lamont, announced a new London Harbor deal as quasi-public debate heats up. So, Governor Ned Lamont announced a landmark deal on Tuesday, yesterday, to develop New London Harbor and an offshore wind center. And so, when he describes it, Lamont announced that Eversource, the utility company, and its Denmark-based partner, Ørsted, North America, Eversource and Ørsted will transform New London into the green energy capital of the Northeast, which is part of a deal unanimously ratified by Connecticut's Port Authority. Apparently, Connecticut's Port Authority has been in involved with a bit of scandal over the last years when Connecticut state auditors reported last year that the Port Authority officials were spending thousands of dollars on expensive meals and liquor, incurred excessive legal fees, and generally acted without clear policies governing purchases, personnel matters, and ethics. The auditors complained repeatedly about lack of management, oversight, saying that the Port Authority's board and executive director had failed to establish policies to govern the operations. That said, Lamont said economic growth has remained a top priority throughout my administration, and this agreement paves the way for a surge in activity in New London and in eastern Connecticut that will cement the state's position as a leader in the industry. When people came up against him saying he moved too quickly in light of the fact that there was scandal around the Port Authority officials, he said, too rushed? Lamont said, too rushed? I'm just the opposite. What the heck took so long? So that is the news from the state of Connecticut. I wanted to get into something on a similar line, taking us away from Connecticut and into outer space. The Trump, I'm going to say the T word, folks, I won't do it for long, but the Trump administration requests a funding boost for NASA's Artemis moon program. The Trump administration is requesting $25.2 billion for NASA in the fiscal year 2021, which is a 12% increase. That includes $3.3 billion to kickstart the development of a human-rated lander for the Artemis moon program. According to, let's see, what they're trying to do, nearly half of the budget requested, or $12.3 billion, is devoted to new and ongoing projects focused on a return to the moon and eventually for flights to Mars. NASA documents indicate that the Artemis moon program is currently envisioned with landing a man on the moon and a woman on the lunar surface by 2024. Let's see. Through learning to live and work on the moon, the United States and our international and commercial partners will develop the experience, technology, and systems that we need to eventually send humans to Mars. These efforts will continue America standing as a world leader in space exploration. So as I read the article, I only realized later when I went back to double check on the article that the budget, the Trump administration is requesting $25.2 billion for NASA in 2021, but they will also need $27 billion in 2022, $28 billion in 2023, $28 billion in 2024, and $26 billion in 2025, which is around $140 billion. So if you thought $25.2 billion, I guess it's not a lot for a space program, but it really comes out to about $140 to $150 billion, which is the same amount that Google purports to be Jeff Bezos of Amazon's net worth. It's also $140 to $50 billion is also what people are projecting that the alternative meat industry will be, as well as the video gaming industry, $140 to $150 billion industry. So That is that. And now coming back down to the planet and into something the new intern here will like, which is sports. Well, spring, what is it? Spring, what is it? Kickoff? I'm sorry, this is baseball. Oh, the Houston Astros are down in Fort Myers, Florida, kicking off the spring season. And they're kicking it off by apologizing for cheating. So it starts with a Houston Astro turned Minnesota Twins baseball player Marwin Gonzalez apologizing for illegally stealing signs during Houston's 2017 World Series championship. So I went in and dug up the story about the Houston Astros cheating scandal. And I guess in January of this year, the Houston Astros player, the famous player Carlos Beltran, resigned in January 2020. And he resigned as the New York Mets manager amid a sign-stealing scandal. The Boston Red Sox also parted ways with their manager, Alex Cora. See, the guys now are paying attention to my news here. So they also parted ways with their manager, Alex Cora. And who else got involved? There's a lot of people involved. Let's see. So what is stealing? What is stealing? Apparently, it's been going on for a long time, and sign stealing was even in the movie Bull Durham, which was with Tim Robbins and Kevin Costner. But the sign stealing. So apparently, what was happening was that there, and guys, you can jump in here, but apparently what was happening is that when there is something that goes wrong, the Major League Baseball has given managers one chance per game to challenge a call on the field using the video replay system. Challenge one call per game Each team has a video replay room, and that camera is used in the center field camera feed to steal opponent's signs. So they're talking about, at the start of the 2017 season, one of the Astros players would act as a runner and would relay from the video over to the dugout what signs were being given. They would literally run them back and forth or text them back into the dugout. And early in that season, in 2017, which culminated with a World Series title for the Astros, so they're cheating. Maybe many of them were, but they did win the World Series. On the bench, Cora would call the video review room and get the signs. On some occasions, the signs were relayed via text messages to a smartphone in the dugout or a smart watch on the staff of a staff member. In some cases, they arranged for a television monitor to be installed immediately outside the Astros dugout with the center field camera feed on it so that they could watch the signs directly. And then the players then this is great. The players then banged on a trash can with a bat or a massage device known as a Theragun once or twice to signal to the batter to be ready for a curveball. If it was a fastball, they wouldn't bang on the trash can at all. So will any of these players face disciplinary action? Apparently not. It's difficult and impractical, according to the baseball commissioner. And so we get our friend, Marwin Gonzalez saying, and I quote, as he enters into Fort Myers for the beginning of the season, I'm remorseful for everything that happened in 2017, Gonzalez said. Everything that we did as a group and the players that were affected directly by us doing this and other things. That's what I feel the most regret over, and I am remorseful. Aww. Okay. Now we are going to go to a different direction. We're going into something I found about LGBTQ rights and what is going on with progression in policies around LGBTQ rights since a decade ago, in 2010. Apparently, well, of course, as we all understand, there's been progression. But there is also evidence that it is plodding along. So I didn't know what these initiatives were. I did see that there's a map that was put out by a program called the Movement Advancement Project, which is an LGBTQ policy program. And that map shows which states are really getting behind different initiatives around or policy support. I want to call it policy support initiatives, getting behind them, because it's one thing to allow people to marry. But if you marry and then go to get your license and nobody will give it to you, well, that's not policy support. So I looked up some of the initiatives. And, you know, folks, we just don't think about what some people are facing. So what are some of these policies that the LGBTQ community is up against? And some of those are around the LGBTQ youth and their protections in schools, their protections for conversion therapy, anti-bullying, and school non-discrimination. Moving away from LGBTQ youth, there's relationship and parental recognition. In some states, apparently, there's still disputes around adoption laws by same-sex couples, even recognizing them as parents of their children. Issues around marriage, civil union, and domestic partnership, family leave, foster care. In the healthcare division, the healthcare area, I should say, there's still bans in many cases around, the transgender community really seems to be getting, not getting support. But across the LGBTQ community, issues around data collection policies, Medicaid, private insurance, state employee benefits. Okay, going to the criminal justice area of the state, defense, gay, trans, panic defense bans. I don't know what that is. Hate crimes against the LGBT folks, just you know what it is. HIV criminalization laws. I don't know, but I imagine that's if you are passing on HIV, the HIV infection. And even restrictions around name changes. Lastly, well, there's religious exemptions, but discrimination for this community around employment, housing, public accommodations, credit, I mean financial credit, your credit score, being a state employee and not getting hired because you're part of this community. And lastly, just going to get your driver's license and having trouble identifying as a man or a woman because we still have only male or female, or on your birth certificate as a marker to say that you're a male or a female. So anyway, when you look at the states that are behind these policies, that are supporting the policies for the LGBTQ community since 2010, the states that have the highest overall support are generally, as suspected, on the West Coast, starting with Washington up in the Northwest, Oregon, California, Nevada, Colorado, and then coming over here to the Northeast, Maine, New York, Vermont, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, New Jersey, and Connecticut. The ones up here in the Northeast that are still not so sure that they're fully behind it apparently is New Hampshire and Pennsylvania. Michigan is not, they call that a medium. They're medium behind it. The states that are actually considered negative policy support include all along the southern coast of the United States, starting with Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Los Angeles, Louisiana, Tennessee, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina. Florida and North Carolina are a little bit more supportive. And then the other ones that are also negative against the LGBT community support is North Dakota, South Dakota, and Nebraska. So that is the report on some of the changes. It's plodding along, but it's like a country that, just like so many areas of life, we're split in half. And then I am going to go to the... we lost acting legend Kirk Douglas at the age of 103, and he passed on February 5th of this year. He was best known for his role in Spartacus, the film Spartacus. I did a little bit of research about Kirk Douglas, and I don't remember because I wasn't going to talk that much about him, but I did see that he was born to a Russian, Jewish Russian immigrant family, and they called him, it was a cliche, like a slang word, but extraordinarily poor family. But I did read he became determined to become an actor, and he fought. He was an activist, I guess, against anti-Semitism, and so this was a difficult path for him. He had a very life with all sorts of peaks and valleys. And so his family was honoring his passing. And Catherine Zeta-Jones, who is married to Michael Douglas, announced that while they're saddened by Kirk Douglas's passing, they have added a new family member, who is called Taylor Douglas, which is their Maltese mix puppy. A Malipoo puppy, which apparently is a Maltese mix. And so Catherine Zeta-Jones was out sporting the Maltese mix on...
That would be Maltese and Poodle.
Maltese and Poodle.
Right.
There was somebody behind me at CVS here in town yesterday, and she had something slung over her shoulders.
Yeah.
And I didn't notice it right away, but we were all sort of stuck there online. And out pops this little head, and it was a chow something. It was a chow, a poo. And these, I guess, everybody's going after these smaller breed dogs.
Hmm.
Oh, they love the – it wasn't a chow. Sorry. It wasn't a chow. It was a cavalier.
Oh, I don't even know what that is. I've never heard of that.
I think they're called a cavalier spaniel. What are they called? Cavalier spaniel. It's an English breed. The queen always had them.
Hmm.
Anyway, so it was a cavalier poodle mix that she went to Iowa to go pick up a few days ago. And apparently everybody wants a dog, but they want it to be transportable. And she had hers in a bag over her shoulder. And they want it to not shed and not, incite allergy reactions.
Poodles are good that way.
Poodles are good. My sister's got six beautiful poodles that she's trying to sell. And then I am going to end with this last story, speaking of dogs. And I think I heard it on the news as we were coming in last night at Madison Square Garden. The crowd was cheering, and they weren't cheering for the Knicks. They weren't cheering for a Fish concert, and it wasn't even Harry Styles. They were cheering They were all assembled for the 144th Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show. And an hour before midnight last night, was it last night? February 12th. It might have been two nights ago.
No.
It was last night?
February 12th is today.
Is today. So, I don't know why. So it is the last night, folks. Yeah, sorry, right. I'm a confused lady. An hour before midnight, the champion was finally crowned, and it was Siba, the standard poodle. And that surprised a
dark
crowd of
black
people.
Dog.
Yeah, large, black, beautiful poodle. And the crowd was a little surprised because many were rooting for a golden retriever or a Havanese.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk lately that golden retriever has never won an award. And it's still the most favorite dog.
Maybe they look for something more exotic than a golden retriever.
Could be. I understand the boxer came in very close.
I saw a picture of the boxer.
Yeah.
Oh, but I love the seriousness with which they take this.
The dogs really, they seem to understand what's happening.
Well, the woman who, let's see, Siba, the poodle who won, standard poodle, the large poodle, Siba's handler, Crystal Klass, said of Siba, she just has, and I quote, she just has this confidence in herself, this attitude. She keeps me on her toes.
No, keeps her on her toes. Okay.
She keeps me on her toes.
On my
says.
Toes.
Yeah. She keeps me on. Well, whoever wrote this, I didn't. She's so elegant and full of herself and funny. And her owners, Siba's owners, have already decided that this was Siba's time to retire after this last Westminster round. Making the win all the sweeter. They said, we think she'll be a great mom. Even better, she'll be retiring to live with the Klass family, her handler's family, including her handler's two-year-old son, who says, whose mother says that her two-year-old son loves Siba already. So that is the news. I do want to remind everybody that it is Valentine's Day. It is a time for love.
Friday.
Hmm. And to go out there and really try to remember how important it is in this time when there's so much fear taking over and such crazy news taking over the planet, to try to keep catching yourself individually as you start to get into a fearful place, or if you're making decisions from a place of lack of money, lack of belief in something, to keep catching yourself. At minimum, what you can do is catch yourself and try to stay in the highest, most loving place that you can push yourself to. And Leonard Cohen ends with, lift me like an olive branch. Let's see. Dance me to your beauty with a burning violin. Dance me through the panic till I'm gathered safely in. Lift me like an olive branch and be my homeward dove. Dance me to the end of love. So that's it, folks. You touched by that, folks? Anyway, tune in next week. I'll have Fred Camillo here, and we will ask him all the questions. He's certainly been out on the news feeds a lot lately, and I'm really thrilled to have him here and find out. He's got a lot of initiatives going on, so let's talk to him about what's up with First Selectman, Town of Greenwich, Fred Camillo. Take care, everybody. Much love to you. Happy Valentine's Day.
Have outworn. Raise a tent of shelter now, though every thread is torn. And dance me to the end of love.
AM 1490 and FM 105.5 WGCH Greenwich.
Party resignation, desperate search, and Barbara Cusack. A disastrous caucus process marred by technical problems led to the resignation today of Iowa Democratic Party Chairman Troy Price. In his resignation letter, Price says that he would bear the responsibility for any failure.